You're listening to The Space Show with Andrew Rennie. On Friday morning, great excitement. An Australian satellite was launched. Yes, an Australian satellite. It's not often that we can announce here on The Space Show that an Australian satellite has gone into space. But that's true. Yes, absolutely true. On Friday morning, liftoff at 7:21 a.m. our time. That was 6:21 p.m. in French Guiana, which is where the launch took place from. No, we are not smart enough to launch our own satellites. And the flight was an Ariane 5. Its official designation was VA218. And the two satellites aboard, by the way, it's an Ariane 5 ECA, which has the Silder capsule. And on the top of the rocket was MESA. Cat 3B. Now, this is a direct-to-home satellite, a broadcast satellite, broadcast television direct-to-the-home, and that's covering Malaysia, India, Indonesia, and, yes, Australia. And it had a mass of 5,897 kilograms at liftoff. It was built by Airbus Defence and Space. But of interest to us here in Australia more was the other satellite called Optus 10. Yes, you know, Optus, that company that says yes. It's a direct television broadcast that has internet connectivity. It serves telephone and data transmission services to New Zealand, Australia, and McMurdo Base in Antarctica. And this was built by Space Systems Loral, which is a United States company. Both satellites were delivered to geostationary transfer orbit. That's 250 kilometres low point by 35,746 kilometres altitude high point or apogee. And at an inclination of 6 degrees, the MESAT-3B was released 27 minutes after launch and Optus 10 was launched 34 minutes after launch. Now, Optus 10 is going to be positioned at 164 degrees east and has a design life of 15 years. The commentator from the Arianespace company got very excited over this launch, and here's how that commentary went.
A tous les DDO, attention pour le décompte final. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, top. Allumage Vulcain. Allumage 2 EAP. Décollage. Les paramètres d'abord sont normaux, la trajectoire est nominale. Paramètres d'abord sont normaux, la trajectoire est nominale.
A picture is worth a thousand words. The rumble in the Amazon jungle that you're hearing right now is the Ariane 5 ECA as it makes its way into the sky over Corfu. Again, it's my fifth Ariane 5 launch I've had the honor to do. Takes my breath away every time. And in just a moment, while we've just crossed the speed of sound, and now the rumble comes. If you were here, you could feel this building shake as the Ariane 5 roars above us. Right now, it is one incredible. Look at that view on the camera as 1,300 tons of thrust breaking the Ariane 5 free from the Earth's gravity. 90% of the power is coming from the two boosters on the side of the rocket. Each one 31 meters tall, about 100 feet, burning 240 tons of solid propellant in just 2 minutes, more than 2 tons per second. Look at that baby move out on the screen, and it is still shaking and rumbling. We can hear it, and I'm inside a soundproof booth here at the Jupiter Flight Center. 2 minutes into the flight, when the boosters have done their job, which will be just a few seconds from now, we'll be about 70 kilometers into the sky, traveling more than a mile a second, much faster than a bullet. And what a picture on the screen. We're going to see the burnout and the separation of those solid rocket boosters. And there it is. Look at that picture. As those two solid rocket boosters separate, fall away, as they did, we lost a lot of weight. We launched, what did we say, 780 tons. We've lost 600 tons. What a Weight Watcher diet. The launcher is now at about 180 tons. As we get lighter, we get faster. And look at that racehorse speed on the lower right-hand side. We're now at 2.15 kilometers a second and growing fast. We can still see the light of the rocket from here. The next event that we will be seeing in just an hour, 20 seconds, 15 seconds, will be the jettisoning of the fairing. Regretfully, it's nighttime. If it wasn't, we'd almost see it with our own eyes. The fairing there in the animation has covered the two satellites while they were in the Earth's atmosphere. We just lost another 2 tons as the fairing drops away. There's some images of what it looks like from a previous flight. The launcher now 120 kilometers above the Earth. We're technically in space. There's no reason to have a covering over them anymore, over the satellite at least. We still have a long way to go. We actually will be dropping off our first satellite at 898 kilometers.
A commentary there from Ariane Spass. Now, this satellite, Optus 10, had a history. It's 29 years since OSSAT A1 was launched in 1985, and one of the satellites was launched from the United States by the Space Shuttle, a couple more from China on the Long March rocket, and this is the sixth launch for Optus with Ariane Spass. There was OSSAT A3 in 1987, Optus C1 in 2003, Optus D1 in 2006, Optus D2 in 2007, and Optus D3 in 2009. And now we have Optus 10, as they're calling it, in 2014. Now, the good folks at the media relations part of Optus couldn't find anyone who knew anything about the satellite and was prepared to talk to the space show. So I'm going to have to tell you a bit more about the satellite myself, because they couldn't find anyone to come on the show today, although there's a possibility of next week's show. Now, the satellite has a mass of 3,270 kilograms. At liftoff, it reduces as they expend fuel during the flight. It's three-axis body stabilized. The earlier OSSAT A series of satellites were spin stabilized, like a top, keeps spinning in the same direction, but these are use little gas jets and things to keep it stabilized. The satellite is 5.1 meters by 8.5 meters with a span of 24.7 meters across the solar arrays. The arrays produce 7,535 watts at the end of life. At the beginning of life, they got a bit more, but solar cells sort of reduce their power during the lifetime due to ultraviolet radiation and solar and particle radiation on the cells in space. And it has two three-panel solar arrays to give that 7,535 watts. Now, to keep in position in orbit, you need to keep thrusters firing from time to time. And it has a bipropellant propulsion for orbit raising and on-orbit drift control, and ion propulsion for on-orbit eccentricity control and inclination control and momentum unloads. So, ion propulsion, that's where they ionize the gas and electrically propel it out to give a bit of thrust. The satellite, as I said, will be in geostationary orbit and located at 164 degrees east, so it can cover New Zealand, Australia, and as far down as McMurdo in Antarctica. It has 24 repeaters on board, that's the radio repeaters. They have a bandwidth of 36 megahertz each and are independently beam and band switchable. Another news from Optus On 2014, February the 3rd, it was announced that a five-year agreement with NBN Co. had been signed to operate the NBN Co.'s two satellites that will deliver high-speed broadband services to rural and remote Australia. And Optus will provide tracking and telemetry and control services from Belrose, which is a suburb of Sydney. And the launch of the NBN Co satellites is planned for 2015, and there'll be two Ka-band satellites and will serve 200,000 homes, farms and businesses. Now, it's interesting to note that Optus 10 had been originally scheduled to launch with another Australian satellite from the company called NewSat, the Melbourne company NewSat, with a satellite called Jabiru, but for reasons we can't discuss now, that did not happen. Well, in the absence of a representative from Optus, we have actually got a representative from Optus doing a puff piece for the Federal Department of Industry. And this is Paul Sheridan, the director of Optus Satellite Services, talking about Optus's role in the Australian space industry.
I'm Paul Sheridan. I'm the Director of Optus Satellite Services. Optus provides telecommunication services across the length and breadth of Australia and New Zealand via our five geostationary satellites. Via these satellites, Optus provides services to remote and rural Australia, primarily broadcast services, both pay TV and free-to-air, internet services via VSAT, and also mobile phone services, so that we cut down the digital divide and provide services to the remote and rural population that are enjoyed daily by those in urban areas. We employ over 130 people and provide them an opportunity to work in the space industry in Australia. A perfect example is here at Optus. We're developing our next satellite, Optus 10, and we've taken two university graduates straight from uni into our business, and they're now working hands-on with the satellite manufacturer in North America. The space industry will be critical for the continued development of Australia, particularly in industries such as mining and agriculture. Not only for the distribution of telecommunication services, but also the fact that these industries will in the future use services such as GPS and the geo services. One of the key components in our success over the years has been innovation. And innovation, the primary driver for us is to create efficiencies. We have a finite resource in the satellites, and making them more efficient enables us to provide better services to the customers. The Australian space industry has to focus on niche opportunities, and it's innovation that'll drive opportunities in those niche environments to give us a future long-term in this business. Collaboration is critical, not only to Optus Satellite Services, but also to the Australian space industry. One of the recent collaborations we've undertaken has been with the National Science Foundation. They operate McMurdo Sound on Antarctica. It's a major scientific site. We provide a link via our Optus D1 satellite that enables them to provide the hygiene services, television and internet services to the workers down there. But we also, importantly, provide a link back from there to America so they can deliver the outcomes of their scientific experiments in real time back to America. Our business here at Optus and the space industry in general relies heavily on engineering and science practices. So the skills in planning and engineering, putting the satellites together, testing them, launching them and flying them are key skills that this business cannot operate without. I was lucky enough when I was young to see Neil Armstrong walk on the moon. To me, that triggered something that I was keen to be involved in long term. When I finished high school, it was at the same time that the satellite industry started developing in Australia with AusSat and the initial launching of our first satellites. For people out there who are looking to be involved in the space industry, I think there's ample opportunities. As Australia develops niches and works in collaboration with people across the globe,